Oh, hey, Kate.
I feel pretty, oh so pretty. I feel pretty and witty and gay. Anyway, how are you doing?
Good. Hold on. I'm gonna try and I just want to make sure that oh yeah, that's not the setting that I want. Sorry for the clicking sounds you're probably experiencing.
Professionalism, professional,
Can you hear me?
professional podcasting. Can you hear it?
I can hear it. Can you hear it?
Coming through the air tonight. Yeah. So, what did we learn this morning?
Learned so many things.
What the most important thing that I learned this morning at 38 years old is that even if hair color calls itself washable, impermanent, and removable, that doesn't mean that you should put it on your own head. I am full on midlife crises.
Crisising.
So I have these magnificent tufts of white hair on either temple, and it's not that I'm trying to hide them, I like them. But I thought to myself as a brunette, this is an opportunity for me to play with fun colors. And due to some exquisite targeting on behalf of a hair coloring company that found me on Instagram and stalked me like a mad dog, like a mad blind dog for 3 months, I purchased it. And it's like just a conditioner that you put in your
Yeah,
hair. It
I've
doesn't
seen it. I've been
improve
stalked by the
color.
same company.
Oh, they got me. They got me good. And, so I bought two colors, rose gold for brown hair and turquoise for brown hair, you know. And
Like
so
you do.
I put one on each side of my gray tufts and immediately was like, oh man, it's no different than it was when I was 16 years old trying like fucking, what is it called? Do you remember that manic panic shit?
Oh my God, I almost just spit out my coffee. Yes, I do.
Manic panic from a Hot Topic.
Oh, Hot Topic.
Oh, Hot Topic. That was a hot topic. Anyway,
Twas.
so here I am,
Twas.
20 years later. Same mistake made. And they say, and it's said on memes on Instagram from wise yogis, the universe will keep presenting you with the same lesson until you learn it. And so the universe was like, did you learn it? Did you learn the lesson about dyeing your hair cotton candy colors? Did you? And I was like, no, I didn't learn.
Clearly, there was no learning happening.
And so here we are.
Fabulous. Fabulous.
So much else is happening.
So much else. It's freaking freezing outside.
I love it. I love it. I went swimming in a body of water the other day that you're not supposed to swim in, and it was great.
In the cold?
Yes.
What body of water?
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
Because I don't want to get emails like, that's where we get our drinking. Well, you just drank me. So, let's just say that it's local. And I'm really into it. I'm into cold plunging.
Fabulous. Well, this is off to a great start. Hair dye, cold plunging.
Yeah, you know, it's been a weird couple of months. And
Yes, it most certainly has.
I'm just celebrating it being weird. It's going to keep being weird, and that's okay.
Yep. For sure.
Are you doing?
I am doing all right. Lots of here's I'll pull a Jay Brown. It's just lots of changes coming. Dealing with how difficult it is to have certain aspects of those changes out of my hands and wanting them to happen more quickly than I necessarily want. Or it's not even that I want them to happen quickly, it's just that when you hit that that point of being blocked and like you can't take the next step and it's up to somebody else to like unlock that next step, that's very frustrating to me. But I do feel excited about what's next. I will say that. Tune in next time.
For a less opaque.
Just less opaque. Not necessarily transparent. Just less opaque. Yeah. But it is interesting to... like, whenever there's a big transition or a big change that has to happen, there's always, like, there's the amount of internal work that you have to do to, like, be like, okay, we're doing this. And then when you start to execute it and other people are, like, having their reaction. And then I get really frustrated because I'm like, why the fuck are they having this reaction? Like, this doesn't make any sense. And I have to be like, oh, wait. They have not been, like, present with my internal dialogue for the past 4 years. So they have to have their own reactions. They have to have their own feelings.
Yeah.
And that is a very, very fascinating process to observe and be with. And, yeah. I'm, like, imagining everybody speculating it. Listening to this right now.
And for those of you that are speculating, you're probably right. Whatever it is you're thinking. Whatever it is you're thinking is probably right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know,
Ryan.
Kate, life's weird.
Ryan, life is so weird and so uncomfortable.
Yes.
And, like, I am okay with the uncertainty. And I feel like it's informing my teaching. My teaching has gotten a lot, like, weirder.
That's a scary thought.
Well, I just mean, like, it's gotten,
no, I know what you mean.
Like, linguistically weirder. I feel like I am, because of this shit, I feel like I'm a lot I don't know if chattier is the right word. I just feel like
I went to your class the other week. It was like a slam poetry night with yoga Jesus. Shapes.
Wait, was it really? Was it slam poetry in the yoga saloon?
There was honestly a point where I was just going to sit up and just be like, I must stop doing these poses and just listen.
I honestly, like, I don't have the bandwidth to question the... It feels like the right thing to do right now.
Absolutely.
And I don't know that I'll always teach that way, but there feels like an urgency right now. Like, I feel like the world's about to end, and I want to tell everyone to, like, grab their loved ones and hug them and, like, live your life, you know, because it's all going to be taken away. And that's true.
And that's true. Yes.
Everyone you love will be taken from you. It's happening. You will be taken from you. Everything is ending.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And I feel like right now it is my job to walk into yoga rooms and, like, remind people of their dying. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that in, like, the most positive way I possibly can. Like, how fucking exciting. That we're alive right now. Look around, you know, and I that feels like what's urgent in yoga.
That is going to be stuck in my head for eternity, and I blame you.
I feel like with the eventual collapse of the environment, with the upcoming elections,
and this morning is the beginning of all of the, as we record, there are hearings commencing.
Exactly. Right now. So there is an urgency for being alive in our consciousness right now. Like collectively, we need to keep slapping each other lovingly across the face and saying, are you doing what you want? Are you being kind? Are you fucking present? Are you fucking present? Because this is ending.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's certainly part of my midlife crisis to be. It's also deeply part of my practice. Like my practice in terms of like somatically what's going on for me, like I'm like 80% going to get this hip surgery. And, you know, I am feeling my body in ways I've never, you know, it's changing just like everyone's does. And, I am trying to seize upon the inevitable upswing of my own awareness of my own mortality in like the most positive and productive way. Because the alternative, Ryan, is that I lay down and drink myself to death, or I just become deeply negative and of use to no one and nothing.
Yeah.
Like that's the alternative. So my classes right now are a little bit chattier because that's the tax. Like that's the tax on what I'm going through, and I'm kind of at peace with that.
Yeah.
And that's what happens to everyone that's going through shit when they're teaching. Their classes get fucking weird.
Yeah.
It's
my class was distinctly strange last night. But a lot of that is because there's enough comfort in what I'm doing, what I'm attempting to do physically within the practice, but it like doesn't really, I want to say it doesn't matter which shapes I'm using to do it, but like if you looked down at my notes and you just looked at the little hieroglyphs of the postures, you'd be like, that is the worst yoga class that you've ever done, like that anyone could ever put together in their entire life. But like, because I'm not really tracking towards the posture, it makes sense. And then I have to go through this like Rube Goldberg straw of editing that into a thing that looks and feels palatable to like a regular yoga classroom, and then also still try to teach the thing that I'm teaching, and it kind of like explodes, and it either goes well or everyone looks at me at the end of class and it's like, what the fuck was that?
What just happened? Yeah.
And occasionally both of those looks happen at the same time. But those are the best. When everyone's like, what the fuck was that? I feel great. But some of it too is just bumping up against like, it's hard to like without the underlying framework, it's hard for someone to just get like walk in and like understand what's going on. It's like, and I think this happens all the time when people pop into Iyengar classes or pop into an Ashtanga class, like they're getting all of these little pieces, but they don't have the broader context, and like that little bit of information can be very, very dangerous. Like the phenomenon of vinyasa teachers like throwing in these like sort of typical Iyengar yoga tropes. It's like, yes, and that is a like very particular lesson within a very particular an organized method, which you can think whatever you want about that method, but like if you're just like picking little pieces from it, I don't really know how well it works.
It works just fine, Ryan.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Because if someone's yelling at you to do a particular action and you just get really good at doing that particular action without ever taking the class where they teach you to do the opposite action, like, you start to, like, pattern in things that aren't necessarily helpful. So, like, you know, you could argue whether, you know, about, you know, why that has such, like, is sort of like up on the pedestal of alignment place within the yoga culture, and that's a fine argument to have, but it's a lot, whether in any method or in no method, to just walk into a classroom and have a 75-minute experience and, like, also to try and learn something. And that is something that I'm still very unclear about how to do, because I think the context of a yoga classroom has become quite nebulous on many fronts.
Mm-hmm.
And you might argue that that's a good thing, and I think there mm-hmm. are some aspects about it being a good thing, but I think there are mm-hmm. also some aspects of being that's really not so great.
Mm-mm.
Are you just going to agree with everything I say now?
Is that how this podcast is going to go? No, I agree with everything except for the last one.
What is the last one?
The things that aren't so great. So here's the analogy that just sprung to my head, which, you know, it's good if it just sprung to my head. so if you wanted to teach people about plant medicine, and all you did was have them walk into a room and hand them a cup of tea and drink it together, that would still be learning about plant medicine. Now, if you had them come in, served them a cup of tea, and then talked about one of the ingredients in the cup, just one of them, that would be learning about plant medicine. And if you have a scenario where you come in and you look at all the individual components that make up that cup of tea, you boil the water, steep it, talk about the action of the steeping, talk about the equal and opposite pairings of different phytochemicals and what have you in the cup, and you have, like, a really robust lecture around what's actually synergistically happening anatomically in the body, in the mind, in the spirit when drinking a cup of tea in community, you are also learning yes. about
okay and let me offer scenarios. Offer this counter, because I agree with that. If I walk into a meditation classroom and I sit at the front of the room and I tell some, or I talk people through some mystical journey through the chakras, which is not really something that I ever do, but let's say that I did, and people left feeling as if they had an experience of meditation, they might have learned something about meditation, but more, they had an experience. If I walk in... If they had an experience of meditation, which is not exactly, because the thing that is missing from that is that they probably wouldn't be able to replicate that on their own.
Why not?
In one 20-minute sit, I don't think that most people, I'm not saying all people, I'm not, but I don't think that most people would be able to replicate it on their own. And I'm not saying that the guided meditation couldn't be delivered in such a way that that was possible, because I do think that that's possible. But I think most of the time, it's just a guided meditation, people are getting a good experience, and that's valuable. What I think is potentially more valuable, though, you know, you can be skillful about where you do this, is to walk into a room and say, you know, whether it in some way, shape, or form during that 20 minutes, that this is a worthwhile technique for meditation in simple terms. Let's practice it. Let's debrief it. Let's practice it again. Go home and try it. And if we're really trying to teach ourselves out of a job, I'm always going to err towards that latter scenario. It's not to say that I'm not going to use the idea that I can guide people through an experience to bring them to, you know, to help to settle a room or to help to create a vibe, as it were. But I'm always going to err on the side of, can I teach at least some aspect? And the meditation is helpful because it's short enough. In the course of a yoga class, you're always balancing some aspect of both. Something that can actually be taken away and practiced.
Agreed. And I strive for there to be one moment in every class where there's like a, like, let's talk about a thing less poetically or less experientially and more practically.
Yeah.
And I think about that often as like, and if this doesn't feel good, how does this feel? Like, ask yourself to make those micro decisions. But ultimately, like, I also really value people in my experience, myself included, I'll speak from my own experience. I have to fall in love to want to learn how. So the experience of it, sometimes takes center stage because it's like the urgency of the present moment of like finding relief or having a positive experience or even a negative one that is somehow freeing, whatever, that could cause someone to fall in love with the practice that would make them more open to the possibility of even doing it on their own. Like they like it. They like something about it so much that they're willing to do it on their own. Like having that cup of tea was so fucking delicious that they now want to go and figure out more about the ingredients and make some at home. So it's always sort of for me like walking the line of, you know, and also I just am in a place where I have very little interest in nitpicky fucking alignment shit. I'm done hearing about like safety.
Well, but don't you agree that that conversation can be had outside of the realm of safety and more in the realm of choice?
Yeah, of course. I'm very interested in choice.
Well, because that's what I'm saying is like, okay, here's this thing that we arbitrarily refer to as triangle pose.
Yeah. Yes.
You have a leg. The leg moves in certain ways. What are your choices realistically within triangle pose to help you feel some sense of, for lack of a better word, stability? And then, you know, what are the, like, my interest in, and not every single joint in every single pose is, well, what are the choices that you could make? And, you know, within the context of teaching, it's too overwhelming to go joint by joint throughout the entire body. But you can just say, okay, like legs, let's come into triangle pose in a particular way. Let's like form the vague shape of the pose. And then what if you, you know, God forbid, bend your back knee a little bit?
That one.
Oh. Is anything bad going to happen? Probably not.
Oh, but folks lose their mind if you tell them to bend the front one.
Yeah. Oh, but, and then the other point is that I do think that within these, you know, as systematic as you want it to be, within the exploring the possibility through the joints in the given form that we call triangle pose, there's also quite a bit of sliding and gliding of the musculature that you're promoting. And there's quite a bit of pumping that's going on, especially as you begin to turn the chest.
So sliding and gliding and pumping.
Mm-hmm. And that I think, or at least my perception is that that's what, that is the process in the pose that makes it feel valuable to me. Because otherwise people just end up holding the pose. There's that like ta-da moment that like, look, I did it. And like, I just never want that to be there. Like, that's why I hate photo shoots so much, is it's just like, no, the poses cannot actually be captured in a photograph. It just can't. Because there's, and you look at really like skilled practitioners from any method, and you can see that there's just like these little micro adjustments and sometimes macro adjustments that are being made moment to moment to respond to what the practitioner is feeling. And that's hard to teach. Because it sends you down this rabbit hole of like, okay, what's the meaning of sensation? What have I been taught about sensation? Is more sensation good? Is more sensation bad? Is this sensation painful? Is it just discomfort? Is discomfort healthy in some forms? Is, you know, how could I possibly know that my experience of stretch is the same as your experience of stretch? Is the experience of, you know, it's a dizzying rabbit hole to go down. But I think a worthwhile one.
So I had to make a choice.
Oh yeah.
Yes, we are a Down Under, and I'm really excited about it, marking on the schedules whether or not the class provides hands-on assist or not, whether there's the potential for it or not. And I think that's great because people like me can be like, no. No.
Don't you think that, I mean, I think that's great. I'm really, my brain immediately went to the like technical side of things, like how the fuck do you do that mind body?
Oh, I think in the written.
Oh, in the written description. Oh, okay. I thought there was going to be some sort of icon.
Yeah, like on the printed schedule.
Oh, okay. I see.
I think, although I maybe it'll be online too. I bet there's a way.
I know. Yeah. Anyways, that was just my dorky brain kicking in. Continue.
Yeah. So it was like a quiet sort of coming out, you know, to make a declarative statement like that publicly, you know, I don't think I'm going to lose
is it like a either or marking, or is there some intermediary somehow?
I think there's just like an image for if there is going to be hands on, and there's an image for if there is no hands.
That's interesting.
And apparently most people are veering towards hands on.
I guess. If I put myself in that position, I really don't know what I would put down. Because I'm like thinking, do I ever go in and like do the type of assist, hands-on assist that I was taught in my teacher training? No. But like, there are certainly times when I might ask someone if they need a hand coming up into an inversion, which would require hands-on. And so I just wonder, like, if you did mark hands-on, then does that create the expectation in the class that there's going to be like, what type of hands-on is expected when you put that symbol of a hand or whatever in front of the class? Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? I just feel like there's like a really wide range of what's possible, which might lean me towards just saying no hands-on.
Yeah, I'm saying no hands-on, and if I have a relationship, and I'm going to continue to do what I do, which is if I have a relationship with a student, if I've worked with them privately, if I've known them for years and I can talk to them and there is a situation where an agency could be provided and they are able to say yes or no, then I'm still probably not going to touch them, you know, but I just feel like there is such a value in providing a space where that's just not a thing for a particular class. It doesn't have to be every class you teach. You know, like yeah. Maybe if you were teaching a level 2-3, it could be like, you know,
whatever that means,
whatever the hell that means. Yep. And maybe, I don't know. I do know whenever you hear me say, I don't know.
It you means, do know.
I know. I don't really want to say. Yeah.
I do think, like, so I agree that having classes that it's just like hard no is valuable for people to see. It's the like.
Did I lose you?
No, I'm here. It's just long pause.
Yeah, it was.
It's the expectation that it creates in the other direction is interesting to me. And the...
Say more about that.
Like I just you know, I've been to like countless and participated in hosting, you know, at various studios where I've had jobs like being the events person, these like assisting workshops, which is probably a good segue into the other thing that we were going to talk about. And I see the type of manual assist that is being advocated for in, I would say, like 90% of these, not all of them, but 90% of these. And I would agree that especially in a crowded yoga classroom, that they just have no place. Totally 100% agree. And that there are aspects of manual assistance that are much less invasive, that with consent could be totally valuable. I think the thing that is difficult when you and I have these conversations, that is I think a little bit different, is like I am the biggest class that I teach in a given week is maybe like 12 people, and usually smaller than that. So I get to be perhaps a little bit more conversational.
Totally. Yeah.
You know, so that's where I see, like, so it isn't a big deal to, like, take everybody over to the wall, set up, you know, the 6-block headless headstand thing?
Yes.
Yeah, and so, like, that's an example where, routinely, people want a little bit of a hand up coming into the pose. And so, and usually they'll ask for it, like, can you help? and then I will. But that obviously is a hands-on moment. But it's not necessarily a, like, I'm not picking them up by their pelvis, you know, I'm just helping them leverage their legs up against the wall, the sort of like kick into me and then take the other leg up. Mm-hmm. So I just see like so many like moments where it's not the person gripping the back leg of a lunge with their legs and then cranking the person's chest around, that old chestnut.
Oh, chestnut.
That, you know, like, I think within those classes where that touch icon or whatever it ends up being is there, I think there would need to be a broader discussion around what type of touch are we saying is valuable. Because there's such a wide range. And to make sure that we're not, like, that it's still held within this idea of consent. So, like, say there is someone who's wanting the experience of a group yoga class, and the only classes that are available are ones that have that little touch icon, that they know that they could still walk into those classes and say, please don't touch me. You know what I mean? Like, so it just...
Yeah, and that's where the flip chips come into play. Oh, it's just all such a mess. I mean, I just don't understand. I don't... Can we talk about the New York Times thing? Because
we're veering.
I feel like that
head first into
defense.
Oh, it was awful.
So
let's bad. let's set some context. So I believe her name is Katie Rossman, and I might be getting that wrong, but I think that's the reporter's name. Did a article which accompanied a 30-minute documentary. On The Weekly, which you can find on Hulu. If you have a Hulu account, you should go watch it. You've probably already watched it if you're listening to this podcast, I would imagine. The first segment was about Patavi Joyce. The second segment was about this assisting workshop, much like the one I described helping to host and things, at the Asheville Yoga Festival with Johnny Kest. Johnny is the brother of Brian Kest, who's a really well-known, you know, kind of the Baptiste of the West Coast, if you will, power yoga person. It was a really, would you like to describe the assist that set the stage for,
I mean, look, if you've spent any time on Pornhub, you've seen it. So it's a guy kneeling. So it's a teacher, male teacher kneeling down, woman in front of him, as if he's about to perform a gynecological exam. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hoists her forward and up his thighs.
Through a sort of halasana-ish position, like pushing the legs towards her head to get the knees underneath the sacrum.
And uses his thighs and hands on her hip bones to provide space. And honestly, I saw it, and it was, like, the first response I had was, like, almost vomiting. And I'm not being hyperbolic. It was that thing that feels so icky that, like, the pit of your stomach is, like, remove the contents.
Yeah.
And he was just so matter of fact and sure about it that to me it was terrifying. It was like Saturday Night Live was doing a sketch on creepy assists.
Yeah. And you could see that the people in the room, like the camera caught some faces that they were uncomfortable with. And it looked like the woman who was receiving the assist was, if not uncomfortable, definitely... had no idea what she had just signed up for, in demoing that.
Yeah. You know, a woman, did you want to describe this next part? You do it.
Well, I was also going to say, like, I have had that assist done to me before, but only in the context of getting a Thai massage.
Uh-huh.
Which if at least if you know what you're getting into when you go get a Thai massage, you know that you're going, like, it is an intimate thing. You're being placed into all manner of positions by the body worker, but then you also signed up to be touched for an hour and a half, and
in that way too.
In that way, yes. And the only times that I've had that done has been with a Thai massage person who knew me well. And so I would wonder whether they would actually do that position if there wasn't already a relationship. Like if it was like a brand new person on the mat. So just saying that. This was in the context of a yoga class. And it sounded like from what the reporter found that it was a fairly common assist that was done in his studio. I think it was referred to as the diaper change assist.
Are you kidding me?
No. Go ahead.
No, you do it.
Okay. So then there was a woman in the room who asked if Johnny had asked for consent when he does that, and then a conversation. Well, it wasn't really a conversation, but and then she tried to explain, I think, why it sort of was beyond the pale of what should be done in a yoga class, and certainly even if you. Could get to a point saying that was in some way appropriate in a yoga class, that certainly consent would have been needed. And I think if you walked up to a person and described that to them, they would be like, no, don't do that. Like, can you imagine like walking up to someone and be like, hey, Kate, can I take your legs over your head and slide my knees under your lower back and then straddle your legs around me and then push down on your thighs? You'd be like, you probably hit me and walk out of the room.
Well, like, for you, I'd be like, we're taking our relationship journey and I'm in. But like, it's laughable. Like,
Yeah. But he just proceeded to completely shut down the conversation and kept interrupting and putting her hand. Putting his hand on her in a kind of inappropriate and condescending way as the conversation was being had. And
like wildly condescending, infantilizing.
Yes.
Choices that man was making, and then was also proceeding to like completely was like, so what do we do? Ask for consent? Well, that doesn't really work, does it? What am I going to walk over to someone and say, can I have your consent? To touch you? Does that even work? And it was like, I was sitting there and I was like, if I were in that room, I'd be like, well, yeah, it's a fucking start.
Yeah.
And then at the end, he basically laughed it off and was like, I don't do that. I don't do any of that.
Yeah.
And it's like, I feel like,
and has and, he not and been it's awake true for the last there's not, years? There's not a perfect solution, but you at least have to try something.
I just feel like he was totally aware of the larger context. Like,
yeah,
it was just a complete disregard for that room of mostly women who were saying, hey, you know, this is weird.
Yeah.
This is super weird.
Yeah. And, you know, I would actually love to do a little bit of a, like, survey to see. I bet you if you looked at all of the assisting workshops out there, that there is a fairly large percentage of those that are taught by male teachers. Someone's welcome to prove me wrong, but I would venture a guess.
I think you are probably right.
And I'm not saying that that's, like, inherently nefarious. I'm just saying, like, that's interesting.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think I don't know. But I also wonder, I do wonder if we're going to, for any number of reasons, get to a place with yoga culture where we just decide that the manual teaching component is best, best left for either a one-on-one or a small group setting. And when my teacher does teach public classes and he's a body worker, like, he doesn't really invite folks to those classes that he hasn't had on the table. Like, there are people in those classes that he's already caring for as a body worker and as a chiropractor. And it's not like he's giving that level of assistance in the class. It's much more of this, like, hand on, can you be, this is the thing that I'm wanting you to be aware of now. And then progressing from there. But it's, I, to me as a teacher also, like, there's the thing of, like, I don't, the amount of focus I would need to give to do a sort of, like, more in-depth manual assist, I can't split my attention between that and the rest of the class.
No,
That's the thing that always
exactly.
puts the brakes on me doing a ton of like heavy duty manual assist in class, is just a practicality of, like, I can't split my attention like that. And when I'm in class and someone is doing that and they zoom in on someone, I feel that lack of attention. And that,
And that is huge. I totally am on board with that point. Like, I used to do hands-on work in class, and
and I used to do a lot more hands-on work in class.
and I think what you're talking about is really valid. Like, I started doing less and less of it as I got better at it.
Yeah, exactly. That is a real truth. That is a real truth.
And I, honestly, maybe that's why there's a lot of guys teaching it.
What do you mean?
Oh, you know what I mean.
We gonna get in trouble this, but yeah, we're gonna get in trouble.
Yeah, I hope so. Send me the emails. I'm ready. I'm not ready, actually. Yeah, so just stop fucking touching people. You're shitty at it. Just stop it. Get better at something else. Get your fucking hands off people that walk in your room. You don't know what they're going through. You have no idea. And if you think you do, is it worth the risk? If you are like, yeah, it's totally worth the risk, cool.
Which was the thing that he said at the end of the clip.
And he's like, some people, he's like, there's an assist I do where I put my hand on someone's heart. And for one student, it felt like bubbles of joy rising, which, first of all, vomit. Second of all,
Kate, you make me feel like bubbles of joy rising.
rising. Yeah, if I ever make a student feel like that, we have a problem. We have like a larger problem. And then, and he's like, and then I had another woman that I put my hand on her breastbone and she said she felt violated. So what do you do? And it was like, it's clear what you do. Stop putting your fucking hand on people's sternums. Like, yes. Stop. If you have a 50-50 chance of violating someone, that's your answer. Do you not care?
Yeah.
Is it so valuable that one person has like a freaking weirdo response to your hands on their tit that you're willing to like inflict that on a bunch of people? That is the definition. That is the definition of dysfunction. That is like apologist for freaking rape culture.
Yeah.
I can't. And, you know, there are some teachers out there doing hands-on work that I think do a great job. I think that, you know, it's a personal choice for every teacher, but 9 times out of 10, just cut the shit. Stop.
Yeah.
What you're doing is not good enough. It's not. And for all the new teachers out there that are listening, it's okay to question what you're hearing about hands-on assists. If it sits right in your gut and you're like, I don't really want to do this, and it's being taught in a thing that you're taking, you can question it. You should. That's how the market changes.
Yeah.
Question your teachers. Question them hard. And if the answer is not satisfying, if the defense they give is not satisfying, you have choices.
Yeah. And I do think that it is my strong belief that we should not be discussing, we should be discussing it, but we shouldn't be teaching introductory, whether it's a 200 hour or something else, but whatever the introductory training level is that gets you out there in the classroom, that there are far more important things to spend your time on than this is the assist for triangle pose, this is the assist for downward facing dog, this is the assist, like there's just far more important things to spend time on.
Oh my gosh. And just because you like being touched, just because your experience in the yoga classroom is, oh my god, it changed my life when this person touched me, like,
yeah,
does not mean that is what your students will experience when you touch them.
Yeah.
The other thing is like, the touch tree I keep returning to is, if I know that it is within the realm of possibility that I could be causing harm, isn't that just enough? Isn't that enough of an answer? And for like a new teacher, if I were to tell you, look, there's this tool you can use and there's a chance you're going to hurt someone with it.
Yeah.
Why are you so eager to pick up that fucking tool?
Yeah.
That's the thing I don't get. It's like an ego thing. It's like, oh, but I want to be a magic freaking spiritual healer.
Yeah.
No.
But then I think you would have to open up. I think then you would have to open up that dialogue, acknowledging that just that touch is a tool that what's the word I'm looking for? Extreme tool?
Powerful tool. It's a freaking powerful tool. It's a landmine.
And then you'd have to go into the more nuanced conversation of like how like harm can still be done simply in the way that you use your words.
Hell yeah.
And it's just that we have no other way to communicate besides using our words, and like, are the odds that you're going to you know, the odds are still potentially pretty high that, especially if you call someone out for something in class or have to have, you know, firmer words with somebody in class, that that could also potentially do harm.
Say more about that.
Well, I just, you know, I have had moments in class where I've had to be sharp with somebody, but that's always because they're about to harm someone else in the room. Like flailing around into a handstand when it's not time. And I have no problem being somewhat firm in that, and not even a like, you shouldn't be doing that. It's like always framed in a, I really need you not to do that in my classroom. Like, I'm responsible in some way, shape, or form for the safety of this room, and I need you not to do that. And I think that's a perfectly fine request. Because the truth is on their own, they can do whatever the hell they they want. It's just like some things I'm going to be like, you know, I really would rather not have you do that in my class. And here are the reasons why. And usually it's pretty simple. You look like you're about to kick the person next to you. And sometimes it's a little more nuanced, like given what, like I have, it hasn't been a really long time because I don't really emphasize the teaching of headstand anymore. At least in a way where you're actually putting your head down on the ground. Where I have had to have the conversation maybe once or twice, it's like, given what you've told me about what's going on with your neck, I think that there's we should find an alternative to this.
Yep. Yes. Yes.
But always framed in a like, here's an alternative to this, not like you can't do this. Because the truth is that I don't know that. I don't know that person couldn't do headstand safely. I'm just saying, in the context of my classroom that I am leading, I would rather you do an alternative. And when people ask that of me, I always respect it. Like, especially teachers, you know, who I don't know, and I share my history of injury, and they're like, I would rather, you know, you not do the thing that we're doing now, even though I know that I could probably do the thing that I'm doing safely. I respect that because it's their classroom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially when it comes to things that are actually potentially risky. You know what I mean? Like some sort of an inversion situation, which is usually when these conversations come up.
Come up. Yeah.
But they might come up in another way if someone had a different history of injury. My history of injury is all upper body related. So it makes sense that at least in the context of my practice, it comes up in and around the inverted postures. So I don't know. I do think I do think that what happens sometimes, and you might disagree with me on this, is that there is this sense, and it makes absolutely total sense, especially from the point of view of people who run studios. Because, like, this is now an issue. It's always been an issue, but now it's been brought to the forefront. And there needs to be some addressing of it. And this idea that, like, if we do this one thing, the problem will be solved. And until there is, like, a deeper excavation of the dynamics that are at play, I think there are absolutely steps that can be taken, but we just have to be careful that we don't take the steps and go like, okay, problem solved. Because the problem's not solved. We may have made a positive step in the right direction, but it doesn't mean that the problem is solved.
I know that I am close to having a collection of nuanced thoughts on this. And yet I am muffled by my strong, visceral, lightning fast, knee-jerk reaction, which is just stop.
Yeah.
Just stop. Like, all of us, stop. Maybe we introduce it in a different format later. But right now, there's too much at stake. It's fucking mission critical. Just stop.
But that's, I don't think that's not nuanced, because even in that you said, because if the direction was, let's all stop while we figure this out.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
Like, let's just all agree. And it doesn't mean that you're still, like, especially for those folks, because sometimes it does come up into, like, situations of livelihood and things like that, and like, people who do, you know, teach these assisting workshops and help people get better with their hands-on skill, which I do think that learning the skill of being hands-on is really valuable and something that, of course, I am interested in and continuing to grow in that skill. But I just don't know that it is really within the realm of yoga asana teaching. Right? Like I just have gone a different route with it. And it just means that, you know, in the context of a given studio, we could just, all the teachers, now mind you, if it's like a huge multi-state company, that's hard to do, but like at least in the studios that are contained within a city, that you could just say, you know what, we're just going to stop. And we're going to really devote some time to thinking about how to set the context for when we do use hands-on assist, if we choose to use them, and what the role of that actually is, what the value of that actually is. Is it really necessary? Which I hear the voice from deep inside your throat going, no, but like some people would disagree with that. So the conversation could then be
and
had.
Some people are wrong. And I'm tired.
Yeah, no.
I'm tired of the few of us, you know, that are out there. They're, you know, it's a growing number, but like the amount of emotional and intellectual labor it takes to take that fucking dead weight and drag it across the finish line of understanding is exhausting.
Yeah.
Like it takes my breath away, the lack of care and thought people put in to this particular topic. And then I think, why are you so angry? And I'm like, well, because how many times do you have to have this conversation with, like, I don't know. And I don't have the patience for it. I need to refill my cup.
Well, I have the patience for it, so you can refer any humans to me.
Yeah. I will have the patience again, but right now, I am fully burning.
Flames out of the side of your face.
I am
full Madeline Kahn. You've got a veil on right now.
literally. I love talking about it. I do. Yeah. I just am like, I think it's almost funny. I think it's funny right now. Like, I'm so disheartened and bummed that it's like, it's hysterical. Like, I feel... And then I think, well, how did I get to this place where I feel so strongly about what I feel so strongly about? And I think, well, you know, if you just took a bunch of people from outside the yoga community and asked them this question, they'd be like, well, and most of the people I do talk to are like, yeah, that's a no-brainer. Like, if you tried to have this conversation at like any other movement modality, you know, with the exception of like gymnastics.
Sure, but I would venture to guess that within other somatic modalities there is a conversation, or there is some component of touch, but I would doubt that it's standing behind someone in a lunge, gripping their leg between your legs and cranking their chest around into a twist. Right? Like, And you also have to note that a lot of other somatic modalities are more one-on-one. Like there is Feldenkrais classes, but then there's also Feldenkrais table work where you're working with someone one-on-one. So, like, I don't know. I do feel like the... when you bring in people from outside of the yoga world into this, like, it, a slightly more rational conversation can be had, but because it's seen as this spiritual thing, and so many people, even people in my generation, were brought up with these antiquated teachings on how to adjust people, which I don't think are really historically there. Like, it's not like it's been an inherent part of yoga that you crank someone into a pose necessarily, at least from what I understand. Maybe someone could prove me wrong. it seems to be like most of these postural practices, a fairly, in the scope of history, recent development. And I just think that there is a nuanced conversation to be had. And at the end of the day, like, it's going to, hopefully, balance out so that it doesn't feel like the people who are like, hey, maybe we don't do this, are slightly larger in number than the people who are like, you can't have a yoga class without hands-on assists. And therefore the conversation gets to be a little bit more balanced, and also at the end of the day, people are going to do what they think is valuable in their classes, and, you know, studios and teachers are going to need to make their own decision about that, unless we want to be government regulated, and that's a whole other can of worms.
No, but we might have to be.
We can't
have nice things.
Did you listen to the Jay's podcast this week with Donna Fahy?
No, not yet.
She did at one point, like, reluctantly say, like, hey, this is an unpopular opinion, but basically we can't have nice things and we might need government regulation. Like, she, like, kind of echoed that same sentiment.
Hey, I mean, like, there's a, if you get it taken away,
yeah,
you know, you can't have, yep, nice things.
Yep.
I don't know. Which, we know what that means.
You know.
You do know.
Flames out of the side of your face. Can that be the name of the episode?
Flames.
Yes.
Flames, comma, everlasting. So I am starting, along with my friend and fellow teacher Louis D. Pasquale, who teaches heated flow and some foundations. Such a welcome, funny class he teaches. We are spearheading a chaturanga-free movement. Not, by the way, Larissa teaches chaturanga-free, which is so awesome. But anyways, Louie and I were talking about, like, starting a day for vinyasa teachers where it's like, just plan a class without sun A's and without chaturangas. Can you do just one class?
Yeah.
So, more to come on that. Do you like that non sequitur? It's like getting to the bottom of a barrel of fireworks and being like, oh shit, we forgot that one and it's not that big. Do we put it up? Yeah, Frank, we put it up.
Oh, Frank.
Send it up.
Oh, Frank. Sweet, sweet Frank.
Sweet, sweet Frank.
Frank, right, is the name of my dog at home.
Really?
Yes. We have Frank and Bodhi. Two labradoodles.
Labradoodles. Are they anti-allergic?
I don't know, actually.
I think labradoodles are. They're like, oh, lab engineered to not make you sniffle.
Oh, fabulous. Well, this has gone off the rails.
Sure has.
Okay. Maybe we should close.
Sounds good.
So if you have comments, questions, concerns, or long ranting emails about how we're full of crap, please send them to unrolledpodcast@gmail.com.
If you see me in person, don't make fun of my hair. Just wink at me and I'll know. I'll know.
And I will be less opaque with my life situation next time, I hope.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Bye. Bye.